Hello, KSJE listeners, and welcome to this hour's edition of DJ for a Day. My name is Jeffrey Richardson, and I am the curator of exhibits at the Farmington Museum. I've had the opportunity to be on Scott Micklin's show several times, and it's nice to be back doing what I want to do. So it's very interesting to be here. Again, my name is Jeffrey Richardson, and I am the curator of exhibits at the Farmington Museum. When Scott reached out to me about taking part in the event, I tried to think of what I might be able to do for my hour. I understand playing music or doing a talk show or even having guests call in is normally what's typical. Well, I didn't want to play music, as I probably would have just selected Dave Matthews songs, and then there would have been no way I would have been able to get my wife to tune in. I contemplated doing a talk or a talk show. I actually give presentations at the museum all the time, but I decided I wanted to do something a little bit different. And having guests call in is, I hate to say it, often one of my least favorite parts of talk radio, so that was also not appealing. So I tried to think of what else I might be able to do. And, you know, really I started thinking about radio and the history of radio. And I came up with an idea that sounds interesting on paper, but I think we are all about to find out if it actually translates to live radio. And here in a little bit, we will be doing a recreation of a radio scripted program from 1950. But a little bit about kind of radio, the history of radio, and scripted performances on radio before we get there. So I want to take you back in time, back to a time when radio was filled with action, mystery, comedy, and even melodrama. A time when millions of Americans turned on their radio for scripted programming. Radio was, in fact, the only source for scripted programming at this time. The golden age of radio, as it is often described, was a time when radio was the dominant home entertainment medium. It began in the early 1920s and lasted until roughly the 1950s, when television finally surpassed radio as the consumer's preferred choice for home entertainment and scripted programming. Radio and the technology behind it has its roots in the late 19th century with inventors like James Clerk Maxwell, Heinrich Rudolf Hertz, Nikola Tesla, Guglielmo Marconi, and really radio developed over many decades, but its potential was recognized very early on, but it really didn't become a source for entertainment until the 1920s. The first commercial radio station in the United States, KDKA in Pittsburgh, was established in 1920, and entertainment programs began to appear on stations around 1922. That same year, Variety, the influential newspaper and entertainment magazine, declared in a front-page headline that, quote, "Radio sweeping country, 1 million sets in use," end quote. Given the popularity of radio sets or receivers, the key equipment needed to listen to radio broadcasts, radio networks began to appear across the country. Many radio networks were local, but in the 1920s, national networks also emerged. And these national networks came to dominate the radio industry. The National Broadcast Company, the oldest major broadcast network, was founded by the Radio Corporation of America, RCA, in 1926. Their first radio network was the NBC Red Network, which later came to be known as simply NBC, the National Broadcast Company. The NBC Blue Network was launched the following year in 1927. Antitrust litigation caused NBC to divest the network in 1945, and it became the American Broadcasting Company, ABC. The last of the big three was the Columbia Broadcasting System, CBS, which was established in 1927. As mentioned earlier, the big three networks, NBC, ABC, and CBS, came to dominate the radio industry. and their impact on the larger entertainment industry continued with the advent of television, as they became the first big three television networks. Now, many of us, cannot remember the golden age of radio, but I think many of us, most of us, probably can remember turning on a black and white television and having very few options. And those options primarily consisted of NBC, ABC, and CBS. Again, the big three radio networks that also emerged as the big three television networks. Besides the big three, structured differently but equally important during the golden age of radio, was the Mutual Broadcasting System, which was established in 1934. The radio networks, regardless of whether they were big or small, national or local, and the programs that they broadcast were initially designed to do one thing: sell radio receivers. Again, they were designed to do one thing: sell radio receivers. Everything that you heard was a mere advertisement to further that goal. But by the 1930s, radio had taken a foothold in America. Around 12 million American households owned a radio in 1930, with the number jumping to more than 28 million in 1939. The radio became the central piece of furniture in the average family's living room, with parents and children alike crowding around the set every night. And radio was a piece of furniture. I think we think of radios now as being small, portable, but back then they were quite unwieldy. They were large, but they were also very beautiful. So it was a centerpiece for most families. It was something that they were very proud to have in their living room. With radio firmly established and Americans willingly buying receivers, the focus for radio networks shifted from selling radio sets to selling other products. Commercials did not exist in the form that we think of them or we encounter them today. They were thought to be intrusive, if you could imagine that. So what emerged was corporate sponsorships of programs, sponsorships that were designed to sell you a variety of products. Now, classical music, for example, was very popular in the early days of radio. And a lot of the shows that played classical music featured names like The Voice of Firestone, which was brought to you by the Firestone Tire and Rubber Company, or The Bell Telephone Hour, which was brought to you by the Bell Telephone Company, as the name implies. There were other types of music that were played besides classical in the early days, including country and western. But what really became a staple of early radio were scripted programs. Scripted programs came in all forms, from comedy and drama to westerns and soap operas. Entertainment legends like Abbott and Costello, Bob Hope, Red Skelton, and Jack Benny, they all had their own shows. Comic characters like Dick Tracy, Little Orphan Annie, and Popeye the Sailor could be heard alongside names like Sherlock Holmes, Buck Rogers, and Gene Autry. The power of radio and its impact on listeners is often demonstrated through the 1938 CBS broadcast of H.G. Wells' novel, The War of the Worlds, which was part of the program The Mercury Theater on the Air. Directed and written by a young Orson Welles, the program supposedly caused mass hysteria, as many tuning in believed that the description of an alien invasion was real. Now, modern scholars have really questioned the extent of the hysteria, but the episode clearly showed that Americans were turning on their radios and that they were a captive audience. It should be noted that these radio programs, all of them, were emblematic of the times, and as a result, the radio program showcased both the good and the bad of the era. A notable example of the bad was the popular program Amos and Andy, which ran from 1928 to 1960. It centered on two African-American characters in Harlem that were portrayed by two white actors doing what can only be described today as terribly racist impersonations. Other issues, such as the role of women in society or the sheer lack of diversity, are also evident when listening to shows from the golden era. Another thing that is evident, and I think oftentimes appalling to modern listeners, are some of the sponsorships themselves. Scripted programs, like other programs on the radio, were brought to you by a variety of sponsors. Sponsors trying to sell you products. And some of these sponsorships sound rather incredible to modern listeners. It's one thing for Gene Autry to stop mid-action to let the audience know that chewing Wrigley gum will help him catch the bad guy, but it was another thing altogether to hear cigarette sponsorships. Smoking was common and accepted at the time, and many of the popular shows were sponsored by cigarette companies. Stars and announcers championed the cigarette companies with lines saying things like, "More doctors smoke Brand X," or "Brand Y is soothing for your throat." Again, think about that. Commercials saying that doctors recommend and prefer this type of cigarette, or this type of cigarette is almost medically beneficial. We know today that such claims are downright lies, and actually today cigarette advertising is banned on radio and television. But during the golden age of radio, cigarette sponsorship was the norm. And if you could see these people, many of the actors and announcers, if they had, you know, live streams online during this particular period, you would have seen that most of them were probably smoking while they were doing the performances as well. For good or bad, radio shows both mirrored and influenced American society in the first half of the 20th century. But as the 1950s dawned, television quickly became a greater and more powerful form of mass media. There were only a few thousand television sets in American homes prior to 1947, but by 1955, half of all homes had a set. And by 1960, 9 out of 10 homes had a set, and the average household watched over 5 hours of television a day. The biggest casualty of television's success was radio, specifically scripted radio programs. The popularity of scripted radio programs also declined with the rise of new forms of music, such as rock and roll and the Top 40 format, that began appearing on and quickly became the focus of radio stations across the country. Given the changes in taste and demographics, most scripted radio shows were canceled in the 1950s, with only a few limping into the 1960s. A few radio shows actually made the transition to television, such as The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, Dragnet, The Lone Ranger, Perry Mason, Gunsmoke, and Guiding Light, for example. But these were certainly exceptions rather than the norm. And it should be noted that when radio programs made the transition to television, they were almost completely retooled, especially with new actors. It was very rare for an actor to make the transition from radio to television. So the golden age of radio quickly came to an end in the late 1950s. But its legacy cannot be overlooked. For over three decades, scripted radio programs were the dominant form of mass media in America. So in honor of this lost art form, I would like to recreate an episode of one such program. The program that I plan to recreate was entitled The Life of Riley, which was broadcast on the NBC Blue Network from 1944 to 1945, and then the new NBC Network from 1945 to 1951. It centered on Chester A. Riley, a simple aircraft plant worker and devoted family man who often found ways to make his life more complicated than it needed to be. Riley was played by William Bendix. His wife Peg was played by Paula Winslow. John Brown played Undertaker Digger O'Dell and Riley's co-worker Jim Gillis. And several actors played his son Junior during the show's run. The popularity of the radio program led to a film version of The Life of Riley with Bendix in 1949, a television show starring Jackie Gleason that ran from 1949 to 1950, and finally a second television series, again starring William Bendix, that ran from 1953 to 1958. The radio episode that I will be recreating was originally broadcast on December 8, 1950, and it is entitled The Lawnmower Company. I would like to thank the Old Time Radio Research Group for making the transcript available, and Jesse Taylor of the Arizona Theater Works for transcribing it. Now, a few quick notes on the differences between my performance and the original program. First and foremost, The original program, like all other scripted radio shows, was performed by professional actors. This was their profession. This is what they did for a living. I can certainly assure you that I am not a professional, at least not in this regard. So you will have me, an amateur, going through the motions. But you, again, if you were listening to the actual performance, you would have professionals doing it. Second, while an actor might play more than one character on a given show, multiple actors played multiple characters. I will be playing all of the characters in our recreation. So please excuse me if some of my characters' accents sound terrible. Some of them I just didn't know how to do, and I'm going to do my darndest. But again, you would have multiple people performing multiple parts on a typical radio program. Sophisticated techniques were also employed by sound technicians to bring the action to life. I will be using some really bad sound effects. Scott is here helping me, and he's going to be queuing up a few things on my behalf. But for the most part, I am going to be trying to do most of the sound effects myself. And again, you have an amateur doing what professionals were paid to do back during the golden age of radio. Finally, the life of Riley was broadcast live with a studio audience, so you would hear laughter over the air. No laughter will be heard during our recreation, which may be emblematic of my performance. We'll just have to wait and see on that. But again, with those differences aside, all of the words spoken are exactly as they were heard when the show was originally broadcast in 1950. Now, just to let you know who the characters are that we are going to be dealing with. We will have an announcer. The announcer will sound somewhat like this, kind of in that deep baritone voice. I seem to do this, and every now and then a little Richard Nixon comes out, so you'll have to excuse me for that. Chester A. Riley, our main character, will just be my voice. We'll just be doing that. Junior Riley is going to be, he sounds like a kid who's watched too many gangster movies from the 1930s. So that's Junior Riley. That's Chester Riley's son. This one is the one I really need to apologize for. Peg Riley. And for some reason, I need to do a Southern accent when I talk like a woman. I think that must be something for a psychiatrist. I'm not sure why, but that's what I'm going to have to do with that one. Joey is Junior's friend. Joey is missing his front teeth, so he talks a little bit. But Joey is going to be Junior's friend. Willie is Junior's other friend. He kind of sounds like, I'm not sure, Mickey Mouse, maybe? I'm not really sure about that. Digger Odell is the Undertaker. Digger actually sounds like he's doing the Monster Mash. That would be Digger. And Digger was actually one of the more popular characters that you actually saw. And keep in mind that Digger is an Undertaker, because when Digger is introduced and the lines that he says all are not so subtle references to his profession, which people really, really loved at the time. Moss Bank Odell is going to be Digger's son. He's really hit puberty, so he's going to have a very, very deep voice. Mr. Peterson is really mad, so Mr. Peterson's going to sound like he's got a scowl on his face. And finally, our last group is going to be, there are going to be some singers. Oftentimes, as part of the sponsorships, you would have singing, so that's just going to be my terrible singing voice. So ladies and gentlemen, I give you a classic scripted program from the golden age of radio, The Life of Riley, the Lawnmower Company, originally broadcast on December 8th, 1950.
Hey, Riley.
Yeah.
What do you have?
Pabst Blue Ribbon. What else?
Smoother, smoother, smoother flavors. That's the sparkle millions favor. Taste that smoother, smoother flavor. Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. What do you have? Pabst Blue Ribbon. Internationally famous Pabst Blue Ribbon. The finest beer served anywhere. Presents The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley. With a sincere wish for good weather everywhere, we apologetically report to the rest of the nation that this day dawned bright and sunny in the part of California where Chester A. Riley lives. He rose early, ate a hearty breakfast, and since the aircraft plant is closed today, Riveter Riley decided to put his holiday to good use by doing various odd jobs around the house.
jobs that he'd neglected to do for some time. So Riley dutifully took his tool chest, went out into the backyard, and for his first chore, began to put up a new hammock. He hammered a nail into the tree. He hammered a nail into the other tree. And then he put on the hammock and stretched it out to test the hammock and see if the nails were secure enough to support his weight. Now that was at 10 o'clock. It is now 12:30, and the test is still ongoing.
Ah! I'm shot. Peg, why'd you do it? Take it easy, Pop. I didn't hit you. What? Junior, what are you doing with that gun? I was shooting at the bulge in the tree there.
Well, you hit the bulge in the hammock.
Ugh, you want to kill somebody.
Well, gee, Pop, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hit you, honest. But it's only a BB gun. It can't hurt you.
Can't hurt me. Ugh.
What's all the yelling about, Riley? What are you sitting on so funny?
Well, your son almost blew my brains out.
Junior, I'm sorry. Honest, Pop.
That's some son you've got. A sniper. You don't get nothing better to do than go around taking pot shots at people?
I'll shoot at tin cans.
Yeah.
Now you better be careful with that gun, Junior, or you're not going to be allowed to play with it.
Some kid. When I was your age, I didn't go around shooting my father behind his back. Why don't you go play baseball?
Ah, there's nobody to play with. Most of the gang went camping up to Big Bear Lake for the weekend.
Well, why didn't you go camping?
Because you said you wouldn't spend the money.
Always excuses. Anyway, there's other things to do besides going camping. You can have fun right here in town. Why don't you go swimming?
The only place to go around here is the Y.
Well, why didn't you go there?
Because you wouldn't give me the $7 to join.
Oh, first I didn't want to give you the money for camping. Now I don't want to give you the money for the Y. Next thing you'll be calling me a tightwad. Go on, say it. Say it. I dare you. Say I'm a tightwad.
Well, you are a tightwad.
I ain't asking you. I'm asking him.
Can I go now, Pops?
No, you stay here. Now listen here, young man. You got 2 weeks Christmas vacation ahead of you, so you better find something better to do with your time than hanging around the house all day.
Well, at least you could be constructive, Riley. What do you want him to do?
Well, let him get a job. Go to work.
But it's my vacation.
So what? When I was your age, I worked every school vacation. I was ambitious. Why, one summer alone, I had a job with an ice man. Then I got a job helping a milkman. Then I helped run a corner newsstand. Then I got a job at a stable.
What's the matter? Couldn't you hold a job?
Don't be a wise guy. There's one rule in life you ought to know. And that rule is learn the meaning of hard work when you're young, like I did. And you'll get somewhere when you're old.
Like you did?
Well, there's an excuse to exception to every rule. Now look here, Junior. Tomorrow morning, you look through the WAN ads.
Oh, Riley, he's only 14. Now, we studied hard in school all term. Let him have a little fun. Sure, I want to have some fun.
Fun? That's the trouble with you kids of today. That's all they think of. Fun, fun, fun. But work? Oh, no. Let the old man work.
Well, why shouldn't he have some fun?
A boy's got to learn to stand on his own 2 feet. He's got to learn to be self-reliant. That's the American way. Ain't you ashamed, Junior, coming to me every week, week after week, for your allowance?
No.
No? You're not ashamed to ask me?
Why should I be ashamed? I ask you, but you never give it to me.
Again with the money. Now, just for that, I'm going to teach you a lesson, Junior. You ain't getting a cent out of me all during your vacation.
Aw, Pop.
If you want money, you'll have to work for it.
Now, Riley, why don't you think about it, and later when you feel better...
No, I mean it. My head is made up. Work, work. That's my motto. If there's one thing I can't stand, it's a lazy loafer.
Aw, but Pop...
Now, stop swinging this hammock. I want to take a little cat nap. Wake me up in 6 hours. Hey, Peg.
Ah, you're home early, dear.
Yeah, I walked instead of taking the bus. Where's Junior?
Out on the back porch, I think. He was a minute ago.
Oh, did he look for a job today?
Well, he disappeared right after he got home from school. Maybe.
Maybe? You don't know?
I got more important things to worry about.
What's more important than your boy's future? I want to know if he looked for a job today.
Well, then you go ask him.
All right, I will. Junior! Junior!
I'm out here, Pop.
Oh, Junior. Oh, hey, fellas. Hi, Mr. Riley.
Hi.
Junior, did you go look for a job today?
No, Pop, I
thought I told you you were going to work this vacation.
Ah, but I am. But I'm going into business for myself.
What?
Yeah, I'm mowing lawns. Me and Joey and Willie here. We're partners. See, if we can get a hold of $10, we can rent 3 lawnmowers. And with the 3 of us working, boy, we'll clean up.
Junior, you're still a child. Going into business for yourself? Anything to get out of work.
But Pop, this way...
You'll never make a go of it. You know the kind of neighborhood this is. Every guy mows his own lawn.
You don't.
Or gets his wife to do it.
Well, yeah, but if we get 3 lawnmowers...
Don't you know the only way to make an honest dollar is to put your 8 hours in every day and collect your pay at the end of the week?
But we can make this pay off if we can only get the lawnmowers.
So, Mr. Riley, well, we can make oodles of boodle.
I figure we can make it.
Oh, okay. At least it's better than loafing. You're making a stab at work. I'll give you the $10.
Ah, will you, Pop?
Yeah, there you are. Oh, boy, thanks, Mr. Riley.
Gee, you're a pal. Well, thank you. Thanks, Pops.
Ah, forget it. But believe me, it's just throwing away good dough. You'll never make a go of this.
Ah, sure we will. We got 40 customers lined up, $5 each for a month. That's $200 a month. And gosh, in 12 months, that's $2,400.
Partners, I think we can make a go of this.
Partners?
What do you mean, we? Well, it's my $10 that's putting you in business. What does he mean, my?
You gave it to us.
Gave it to you? Aw, you kids have got a lot to learn about business. I didn't give it to you. I ain't no philanderer. I'm an investorer. I'm bringing in the capital, ain't I?
Well, if you don't want to give it to us, then lend it to us. And we'll pay you 4% interest, just like a bank.
Oh, you want a loan? Well, okay. What's your security?
Security?
Well, sure. That's what the bank would want.
Pop, I give you my word, you'll get the dough back.
What bank would take the word of a Riley? Nah, I've been all through that.
Oh, I guess we'll have to make you a partner then.
Yeah, I guess so.
And everything was going so nice.
Well, what are y'all worrying about? I'll be fair. I'll let you kids have a controlling interest. All I want is a measly 49%. That means 51% for the 3 of you. Anytime you want to get rid of me, all you have to do is call a meeting of the stockholders, and you can vote me out of the corporation.
Oh, can we do that?
Well, sure. I'll draw up the bylaws, and we'll make it legal. Now, anything else we need?
Oh, yeah. We need some dough to buy some weed killer.
It's $2.50 a gallon. $2.50? Why, that's ridiculous. I know where to get some weed killer for 75 cents a gallon.
Oh, that stuff's no good. Yeah, the other stuff's guaranteed.
Now look, it's all the same stuff. It's just different labels. The weeds don't know the difference.
But Pop!
Look, don't try to tell me about weed killer. You get the 75 cent stuff. Okay.
All right,
Pop. You see there, I just saved you 2.25. You need a guy like me in the organization. Well, okay, fellas. Get the lawnmowers and the weed killer and get to work, bright and early tomorrow. The Riley Lawn Mowing Company is now in business. And remember our motto, don't let the grass grow under your feet. Hey, Peg. Boys here yet?
Yeah, they're here.
Oh, swell.
Now, just a minute.
Oh, we got a meeting, Peg.
That's what I want to talk to you about. Now, why don't you leave those kids alone?
Well, now, Peg, I'm helping.
Now, listen to me. They're better off without your help.
Well, that's a nice remark to state. The way you talk, you'd think I was trying to swindle those kids.
Well, I didn't mean that. I only think about you.
I couldn't even if I tried. I only got 49% of the profits. They got 51%.
Well, why should you get so much?
Well, how do you know there'll be any profits? Suppose they don't want to vote any.
Well, that's right.
Right.
They don't have to vote on profits.
No.
With their 51%, they control the vote. Riley, I don't think you were very smart on this deal.
No? Oh, don't you worry. I thought of everything. On paper, they control the vote. But you don't think Junior will vote against me. No, the two of us will decide what profits are taken out. And if the other two kids step out of line, well, we'll just vote them out of the corporation.
Oh, Riley, you wouldn't do that.
Peg, there's no room for sentiment in business. Besides, it'll be a good experience for the other two kids. It's training them for the future.
But Riley, I...
No, later, Peg. I got this meeting.
Hi, Mr. Riley.
Hi, Mr. Riley.
Hey, Pop.
Hey, partners. Okay, the meeting of the stockholders of the Riley Lawn Mowing Company is now called to order.
Ow, man, my hand.
We gotta buy a gavel. Okay, Treasurer Jr., let's have your report.
Well, today we collected on $75.
Mm-hmm. And we spent $6 for the weed killer.
That leaves $69 cash on hand.
Well, that's not bad, partners. Not bad for 1 week's work. Now we got to decide how much of the $69 goes for your salaries and how much for profit. Now, how about $15 for salaries?
$15?
Yeah, and $54 for profits. Do I hear a motion? Yeah, I move the whole $69 be paid out in salaries. 23 each for the three of us, me, Junior, and Willie.
Second the motion.
Oh, no. Now, wait a minute. No. You can't do that. There's a motion on the floor.
Yeah, take a vote.
Well, okay. If you want to vote, you'll get a vote. This is a fair and square outfit. All those in favor of this ridiculous, stupid motion, say aye. Joey?
Aye.
Willie?
Aye.
And I vote no, so the motion is defeated.
Hey, wait a minute. Junior didn't vote.
What? Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, Junior, let's hear your vote.
I vote aye.
There, you see.
Aye? We win. 51% to 49.
Okay, here's the dough, fellas. 23 for you, 20. Wait a minute. 23 for you, Junior? Now, just a minute. Here's yours, Willie.
Oh, boy!
Now, wait a minute. You can't do this. Here's your share, Junior. No, don't take the money, Junior.
Aw, boy, $23.
You're out of order. You can't get away with this. I'll take my $10 back.
Oh, okay. I move we give Mr. Riley his $10 back and kick him out of the corporation.
Wait, no way.
Second the motion.
No fair. All those in favor?
Aye.
No.
Aye.
No. Aye. I mean, no, Junior, you can't do this.
Okay, Mr. Riley, here's your $10 back.
Well, it just ain't legal. You can't do it.
Oh, yes, we can. It says so in the bylaws.
Those bylaws are crooked.
But you wrote them, Pop.
But what a revolting development this is.
You have just heard the first act of The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley. Now here's a question you hear everywhere. What do you have? Pabst Blue Ribbon. What'll you have? Pabst Blue Ribbon.
When you hear the fights on the radio with the fighters trading blow for blow, the moment the bell begins to sound, it's Pabst Blue Ribbon from the very first round. What do you have? Pabst Blue Ribbon. What do you have? Pabst Blue Ribbon. What do you have? Pabst Blue Ribbon. Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. Smoother, smoother, smoother flavors. That's the Sparkle Millions favor. Taste that smoother, smoother flavor. Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. Finest beer served anywhere. Pabst Blue Ribbon. Say, do you want to know how to judge truly fine beer? Well, friend, just take the three-way expert's test. 1. See the clear color and look at the creamy head. 2. Sniff that fragrant blue ribbon blend. 3. Taste the flavor the whole world knows. Then you'll agree. Finest beer served anywhere. Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. What do you have? Pabst Blue Ribbon. And now, back to The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley, with Paula Winslow and John Brown. Well, the Riley Lawn Mowing Company is still a growing concern, only without its president and founder, Chester A. Riley, who was ousted in a shrewdly executed voting maneuver on the part of majority stockholders Junior, Joey, and Willie, aged 14, 13, and 12 and a half, respectively. My own son, my own son. Oh, stop it, Riley. My own son stuck a knife in my back. Well, you deserve it. I deserve it? Is that the way for a son to act? Young Henry Ford didn't do it to old Henry Ford. Young Nelson Rockefeller didn't do it to old John Rockefeller. Young Sears didn't do it to old Roebuck. But young Riley can do it to old Riley? That's okay, huh? Well, there's no room for sentiment in business. What kind of stupid remark is that? You said it first. Yeah? And I was right. That was the smartest stupid remark I ever made. Well, I'll teach them a lesson they'll never forget. Well, there's nothing much you can do about it, dear. Oh, no? We'll take a look at the backyard. Huh? Yeah. Why, it's a lawnmower. Yeah? Where'd you get it? It's a power lawnmower, and I rented it. What for? With that lawnmower, I can mow lawns in 1/10 the time it takes those kids. So I'm going to hire some boys, pay them next to nothing, undercut Junior's prices, take all their customers away, and put them out of business. That's the kind of man I am.
And you're not ashamed to admit it? For heaven's sake, Riley, why don't you leave those kids alone? Now you've got your money back.
It ain't the money. I'm teaching these kids a lesson in business. It'll be an education for them. They gotta learn just because they're big businessmen, they can't shove the little fella around.
You're the little fella? Why, the three of them together weigh less than you do.
I'm gonna throw my weight around. They gotta be taught a lesson. You'll see. By this time tomorrow, they'll come crawling back to me, begging me to come back in the corporation.
Oh, Riley, this is the meanest thing I ever heard of. How can you be so petty, taking advantage of kids? When I married you, I never realized you had this side to your character.
Yeah? Well, there's nothing you can do about it now. You're stuck with me. I'll show them. They think they got me licked? Well, they'll find out that I don't give up that easy. A Riley never says die until he's dead 6 months.
Nonsense. You're no different from my other customers.
Digger, it's you.
Yes, it is. I, indeed. Digger Odell, the friendly undertaker. What are you doing here on my threshold?
I came to see you on business.
On that case, let's not stand out here on the street. Come into my parlor and stretch out. I like to see people comfortable during a business discussion.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Oh, what's the matter, Digger?
I haven't got my key with me. Ring the bell, will ya?
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure.
Someone must be home. Ah, yes. Here comes one of my sons.
Hello, Papa.
You know my youngest son, Mossbank.
Oh, yeah, sure. Hey, he's getting to be a big boy.
Oh, yes. Pretty soon he'll be big enough to help me carry the load. What are you doing with that shovel, son?
I'm playing, Papa. I'm digging a hole in the backyard.
Bully for you. Make it a nice big hole, and Papa will give you something to put in it.
I'm buying a new weeping willow tree. Thanks, Papa.
Charming youth. I believe boys ought to learn how to plant things at an early age. It helps them later on. Now, what did you want to see me about, Riley?
Well, Digger, I'd like to mow your lawn for a small fee.
But your son Junior and his friends are doing it for me now, and they're doing a bully job, too.
I'll do better.
But I made a deal with the boys. We have a verbal contract.
Break it.
Oh, I can't do that. 20 years in business, and I've never broken my word yet. When I make a promise to a customer, the promise is always carried out, and so is the customer.
But you're paying Junior $5. I'll do it for $2.50.
No. I don't approve of price cutting. I tried it once in my business. It was disastrous. A customer came along. I offered to do the job for $100. My competitor cut the price to $50. I got angry and went down to $25. He went down to $10. One thing led to another. We started calling each other insulting names. He kept throwing dirt in my face. I kept throwing dirt in his face. Nobody was throwing dirt in the customer's face.
But Digger, I'll do the job for $2.
No, Riley. And if you ask me, I don't think it's very nice of you to compete with your son, Junior.
Now look, Digger, I didn't come here for a lecture. And if that's going to be your attitude, you and me are through. Even if you wanted to, I don't want you for my customer.
I'm sorry, dear chum. As far as I'm concerned, there are no hard feelings. And believe me, I always want you for my customer. Well, cheerio, you better be shoveling out.
And what'd he say, Joey? Why the meeting, Junior?
I don't know. He just said be at the house and here comes Joey now. Hiya, Joey.
Hi, fellas.
Well, what's up, Joey? Why'd you call the meeting? Is something wrong?
Plenty. You know that weed killer your father made us buy?
Well, what about it? It worked good. It kills the weeds.
It works too good. It not only kills the weeds, it kills the grass.
You're kidding.
Honest. I went to Peterson's house. You should see that lawn. There just isn't any grass. Just a couple of patches here and there. And checked out the other lawns. They're just as bad.
Holy smoke. All of them?
All of them.
What do we do?
Mr. Peterson says that we have to put in a lawn and he'll make trouble for us.
Gee, we'll have to work for weeks and we won't make a cent.
Well, we'll lose money, but it's your father's fault, Junior. He got us to use that cheap weed killer.
Gee, guys, I'm sorry.
Well, a lot of good that does us.
Gee, what do we do?
Well, watch it. Here comes your old man, the big brain.
Oh, cut it out, Joey.
Well, if it isn't the big businessman.
Oh, lay off, will you, Pop?
Well, what's the matter, boys? Why the long faces? You look worried.
Why shouldn't we?
It's all your fault, Mr. Riley.
On account of you, we'll probably lose all our customers.
Oh, so you found out about the jam I got you into, huh? I didn't expect you to cave in this fast. Now look, I don't want to be too tough on you. I think you've learned your lesson. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll come back in the organization.
You want to come back?
On one condition, that I'm the boss. I decide who gets what profits there are. I have full responsibility. And as far as you're concerned, you fellas have just got jobs. You're working for me, okay?
But Pop, there's something you ought to know.
Oh, I don't want to know nothing. Yes or no.
But Pop, we just... Shut up, Junior.
Is it a deal?
We'll have to pay for the damages if your boss...
What damages?
The weed killer yours ruined all the lawns.
Oh, I'm surprised at you, Junior. Just because you don't want me running things, you make up a cock and bull story like that and expect me to fall for it? Well, I'm just a little bit smart for you. That's right, Mr. Riley. No use trying to fool you. Ah, you bet there isn't.
But Pop, quiet, Junior. That's right. You're too smart for us dopey kids.
Yep. Well, what do you say, fellas? Is it a deal? Am I the boss?
Yes, sir, Mr. Riley.
Willie, am I the boss?
Oh, sure.
Junior?
Okay, if that's what you want, boss.
Now, just so there's no misunderstanding, I got a little agreement here that I want you to sign. Okay, here's a pen.
Okay.
No, no, wait a minute. No, no, read it. I want you to know what you're signing so you won't say that I tricked you. This paper just says that I have full charge and absolute control. That's okay by us.
Uh-huh.
There. There. Fine, Willie. Now you, Junior. Now, that does it. Now let this be a lesson to you kids. If you want to get somewhere in business, it ain't luck, it ain't tricks, it's brains that does it.
Yeah, you taught us a lesson, all right.
Hey there, Joey. I want to talk to you.
Uh-oh, it's Mr. Peterson.
Well, Joey, what are you going to do about my lawn?
I advise you. Now, just a minute, mister. If you got something to say about your lawn, you better talk to me.
What do you got to do with it?
Well, I have full charge and responsibility.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, these kids just work for me. I got a paper to prove it. There, see?
Well, I'm very glad to hear that.
Uh-huh.
I just spoke to my lawyer, and I found you can't sue a minor. But seeing you're in charge, I want to tell you something. I'm not only speaking for myself, but for 10 other people as well. Unless you repair the damage your phony weed killer did to our lawns, we're going to take you into court, and we're going to make you pay through that big fat nose of yours. Goodbye.
Wait, what? I'm a minor. Wait, they did it. The kids did it. I didn't do it.
But Mr. Riley, you're the boss.
Well, yeah, you're it.
Well, you, what, you swindlers. You tricked me. Why didn't you tell me about the weed killer?
I told you, Pop, you wouldn't believe me.
Yeah, you were too smart for us. Let this be a lesson to you, Mr. Riley. If you want to get somewhere in business, it ain't luck, it ain't tricks, it's...
I know. It's brains. And believe me, I wish I knew where to get some.
The Rileys will be back in just a moment, but right now, you can travel 15,000 miles to far-off lands and distant isles, from tropic sun to arctic snows. It's Pop's Blue Ribbon, the whole world knows. In Napoli, where Nick and Tony enjoy fine beer and macaroni, you'll always get a welcome smile when you ask this question in Italian style. What do you have? Pop's Blue Ribbon. What do you have? Pop's Blue Ribbon. What do you have? Pop's Blue Ribbon. Pop's Blue Ribbon beer.
Yes, wherever you travel, to Europe, the Far East, South America, or right here in the good old USA, you'll find folks enjoying that international favorite, Pabst Blue Ribbon. Remember, the quality that has carried Pabst Blue Ribbon around the world is yours for the asking. The next time the waiter asks you, what do you have? Tell him you want the world's number one favorite, Pabst Blue Ribbon. Finest beer served anywhere.
But Peg, you don't seem to realize the spot I'm in. Every night when I come home, dead tired, I'll have to put in a couple of hours on those lawns, and all day Saturday, and Sunday, and the holidays, and my 2 weeks vacation next year. Well, I don't know what you're laughing about.
Well, I think it's very funny. I don't want to be an I told you so, but I told you so.
Well, so all right, you told me so. But I wouldn't be in this jam if it wasn't for that Joey. At least my junior warned me, but I didn't listen. That junior's okay. He plays square. He's a real honest kid. He tried to do me a real good turn, and I'll never forget it. Now I wonder how I can trick him into doing those lawns for me. What if I tell him that I'm sick and the doctor won't let me get out of bed?
Ah, and friends, do you hear what I hear? A lawnmower and Chester A. Riley.
What do you have? Pabst Blue Ribbon. What do I need? Pabst Blue Ribbon. Pabst Blue Ribbon beer.
Smoother, smoother, smoother flavors. That's the Sparkle Millions favor. Taste that smoother, smoother flavor. Pabst Blue Ribbon beer.
What do you have? Pabst Blue Ribbon. Pabst Blue Ribbon invites you to join us again next week to hear The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley. The script is by Alan Lipscott and Ruben Schiff. Music by Lou Kozlov. Mrs. Riley is Paula Winslow. Digger Odell is John Brown. And Junior is Bobby Ellis. The Life of Riley is brought to you by the Pabst Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and sent your way with the best wishes of Pabst Blue Ribbon dealers from coast to coast. See you next week. Jimmy Wellington speaking.
Okay, folks, that was it. I thank you. I kind of lost it there every now and then. A few of the kids got a little gargled. I'm sure I'm going to hear it from my wife tonight about the Southern woman. But overall, I think it went pretty well. And it was interesting to kind of, when I was looking into the scripts and kind of figuring one out, I did try to find one initially that had one of those really terrible cigarette advertisements in it. But some of the programs just didn't seem that they would work as well for this kind of hour-long format that we had. I was also mindful, of course, of the different characters and the many sound effects. I want to thank Scott, who's sitting here next to me, who helped me out with those sound effects. Everything worked out pretty well. But it's interesting. I mean, I think you can really see in this particular program a lot of the situational comedy that became very much a staple on television for many, many years, still is. So these radio programs were very much like that. And as I mentioned earlier, you had programs in all the different genres that became genres on television. You know, Westerns dominated the early television landscape, and shows like Gunsmoke were actually radio programs before that time. Lone Ranger is another example. So you really saw the early stages of the entertainment industry in the radio profession. Now, of course, we had movies at that time, but, you know, movies were things that people would go to on the weekends. They couldn't make it to have something in your house that you could listen to at your own leisure in the private of your own or the privacy of your own home with your family, which is what radio offered at a time when television did not exist. That was really something unique and spectacular. And I think a lot of that magic has been lost. Working in a museum, and I've worked in museums where we've had radio displays, and you kind of try to explain to a kid what a radio meant, you know, to their grandparents. They see this big wooden monstrosity with dials. It almost looks like something out of a 1950s sci-fi serial. And you try to explain to them, well, that was where your grandpa got his entertainment. He would rush home, he would turn it on and listen for Little Orphan Annie. And you know, all of these things, you know, big radio, Little Orphan Annie. It's just that they can't understand what it was like. So that golden age of radio, much like I think its contemporary, the silent film, is something that we just don't encounter much these days. For many of us, especially a younger generation, we've lost the appreciation for it. But it's interesting to kind of remember what radio was, what radio used to be like, and that's why I did my best to kind of muddle through an actual radio program, because I thought it would be interesting in a setting like this for DJ for an hour, DJ for a day, to see what it was like to be one of these old-time radio artists. And it's a lot of work, but it was, again, it was a lot of fun. And just keep in mind, that was a very amateurish version of it. So, again, if you can... A lot of these radio programs are available on CD compilations. You can find them on satellite radio and other types of things. So if you do want to seek these out, you'll really understand how powerful they were. And I certainly don't think that I did justice to them. Hopefully I introduced it to you, maybe reminded some of you what it was like. But if you really want to understand what the golden age of radio was actually like, I certainly encourage you to reach out and find those professionals who did this for a living. A lot of these are really, really fantastic, and really, it's something that, again, you know, I enjoy. I'm certainly not old enough to have lived during this particular time period, but I know I've come across them as a scholar, as a historian, and I find them very fascinating. And you can find anything you want. Again, drama, Western, comedy, some of those great Abbott and Costello routines are just fantastic to hear them on the radio. So I certainly encourage you to seek them out. So thank you very much. Thanks to Scott. Thanks to KSJE for giving me the opportunity to be DJ for a day and having this opportunity to recreate this episode of Life of Riley here. So thanks to everyone.